Well, hi everyone, and welcome to Come to the Dyslexic Table. This afternoon, we're talking about resilience, and we're happy to have Sharon Roberts with us, who wrote this article about resilience. And we also have Paddy Carson, who's one of our board members, and a wonderful lady, Jessica Chin, who's always fun. So I added a bit to the title. The title was Resilience, and I added, what's change got to do with it? What I'd like to do is just read a little bit of the article, and then we can talk about it as we go along. Sharon writes that good mental health is often linked to being resilient. Now, I looked up resiliency, and it says resiliency is the ability to bounce back from difficult life experiences or challenges, otherwise known as change. Now, typically, dyslexics are not happy with change. It's very unwelcome, generally speaking. And as Davis facilitators, change is one of the concepts that we enjoy facilitating models for. You might have seen my picture for change. It was a little person who had a seed and then a watering can, and then there was a plant. So the seed is the something, the watering is becoming, and the plant is something else. And our definition for change is something becoming something else. And that's all it means. It's often very scary.
Change can happen externally or internally. I remember you mentioning that to me when I was writing this.
We can observe external changes in the world and we can feel internal changes in ourselves. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
And I notice very often with my students, when I point out that change is just purely something becoming something else, they seem to be okay with the model when they can see it in front of them because they can see the end of the change. But I think the scary part is when you don't know what the end of the change looks like. And that often makes it a very scary thing.
And since they have such good imaginations, if they have a negative bent, they could see change as being catastrophic.
Absolutely.
Especially when you're young, right? And haven't gone through a lot of them. And
very true. You haven't had a lot of examples of changes that can be really cool.
Yeah.
You might have had a lot of examples of changes that were really, really not cool. Very good point. And Sharon goes on to say that experts believe that resiliency is a taught skill requiring qualities such as confidence, which is the quality of being certain of your abilities or having trust in people, plans in the future. Also competence, which is the ability to do something well, and control, which is being able to change or not. So there's a lot to unpack in there. Control often has a bad rap, doesn't it? But in actual fact, control is purely being able to change something or not, right? Competence, that we're pretty good with that. But confidence is often a tough one. The quality of being certain of your abilities. If you're dyslexic, you're probably not that certain of your abilities.
No, I'm thinking back with my own family, because the confidence wasn't there and a change was made in the classroom. It just threw them right off, especially if they had already somehow mentally prepared for one thing, and then there's been a change, and then you get into this funnel of stuff.
It's the confidence of knowing you can do it and the confidence of being sure you can learn or figure it out. There's two different.
Yeah.
The second one is for sure a problem with a dyslexic person.
Mm-hmm. Even a little thing like a change in wording, and this has just happened to me because I had to send off something and they had worded it one way. And then the next time, same process I was expecting, they changed the wording. And it threw me for a loop for a whole week before I finally got clarification. But sending emails, what does this mean? And getting back, well, it's quite obvious, really.
That's not very kind.
No, it wasn't.
Very funny. Well, this brings me to one of Sharon's paragraphs where it says confusion is commonplace in a dyslexic person. And when changes appear, we create an emotion around them. When I was listening to Ron talking about the meaning of emotion, he said that emotion is a self-created reaction to changes. And if you left your house and the furniture was one way and you came back to your house and the furniture is different, you can either go, woohoo, that looks great, or you can go, why did they do that? But you can create the emotion around that.
Yeah.
So it can be happy, it can be sad. Sometimes we have a greater threshold for confusion when we're feeling good, and sometimes when we're tired, we have a lower confusion threshold.
I was just thinking of the furniture rearrangement if I had come home and things were changed, my main concern would be, where is the stuff that I need? Where did you put it? Right? Because I have to have it. That would be my emotion.
And you also say that this is why parents often see emotional outbursts associated with change in their dyslexic child. Being able to roll with the punches is a great life skill. And having the meaning behind those concepts really helps them to face those changes. I think people on the autism spectrum have even more difficulty with this, would you say?
Unless they're like PDA or ADHD as well. And then novelty is quite important. So change is a little more fun.
Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Although if we have control over it, it's way better. If someone else is doing it to us, not so great.
Right. Oh, I never thought of that. So if you're on the ADD, ADHD spectrum, you like variety, you like the novelty. And do you think you can cope with more changes?
I think so, because I never considered as autistic because I kind of love change. But then I get how I don't want someone to help me with my housework or anything because they mess up my systems. Like, I do have it, it's there, but it's covered up by a love of novelty and knowing from experience that usually change or exciting things are better after.
Better after what?
After the hard part, after the change is over.
Okay.
It's for the best. but I always liked new things.
Yes. Very, very interesting.
No, I was just listening actually, and I just was reflecting back to before I did my Davis program and how back then I didn't know it at the time, but what I lacked was control. What I feared was lack of control. And now knowing Davis and embracing it, but it definitely took more than just doing my corrections program. It was a commitment to learning and embracing and learning and growing and realizing the fact that our thoughts are mental activity, and that's all they are. And when we picture that, like as a dyslexic for me, I just see like we're like robots. Oh, there's an idea, and we're just chasing it. Oh, there's an idea, and we're just chasing it. And then we have emotions that reflect back off of that. And now listening to you guys, I think like I was so lost in the world for so long, feeling very frustrated and never understood why I melted down, why I hit so many walls. And thank God I was an overachiever. But now it's just so calm. And I just think now contrast is fun because it's there to show us what we don't want. It's not an enemy. How I look to flow like water versus stand up sharp and be against it. There's so many more things now that I see it as a gift. I've actually gained more control because of freedom that I don't need so much control. Pretty deep stuff, but that's where that conversation kind of takes me.
No, I just need about 20 minutes to digest that. That's fantastic. So it's like not needing control gives you more freedom, which in effect gives you more control.
When I get lost now, I can go to, well, before I would look externally for ways to cope, where now I don't. When something happens, I'll go, wait, that's just a thought. Wait, that's just mental activity. Oh, shoot, that's just a reaction. Off we go again. So like I have control to do that now. I'm not dependent on someone but bringing me flowers or telling me I look nice or smiling at me. These are not things that I need. That's one of the things I think when it comes to the autistic spectrum that I actually admire. Like I love working with kids on the spectrum or people on the spectrum because there's this thing that they don't need to be identified. They don't need to identify you. They're standing there. And I kind of like that. Like it's really kind of funny that we as humans need to be greeted by each other. And we're insulted if we're not greeted by each other. And I just think like, he's just living his world, but it's all about us needing that control to be like noticed. And right, it's just thoughts.
And somewhere in there, I went off in the tangent. And there's a bit what Sharon is talking about is that we are particularly good at imagining things. Mm-hmm. And we're just particularly good at disorienting, right?
Yeah.
And when we're disoriented, things are not really as they seem.
Right. But we don't know we're disoriented because we think thoughts are real. We think that these emotions come up are happening, but they're emotions to other things that have happened. They're never what's happening in the moment. So we're constantly running from this disoriented state to another. But with Davis, you learn that it's just focused. My imagination part is now I see people as like human beings with these thoughts up at top. And I do it too, right? A thought comes up and I'm like, oh, right, that thought. Do-do-do-do-do. And I'm like, oh, not a good thought. But it's taken me somewhere. And then I remember that it's just a mental activity. So yeah. Control comes back. I have so much more control now. I fought for control my whole life. And it was so hard, but now it's like it's easy.
But giving up the control is what's given you the control. That's where you're going.
100%.
I don't know where to go after that.
I'm sorry.
I was just thinking that we should use Davis for like addictions and anorexia, eating disorders and addictions and things.
Oh.
Program way better than what they have in place.
Well, the beautiful part is Nadine's talking about these concepts for life, and change is a big, big part of that. And then there's consequence. And I know that the ultimate goal is to end up with the meaning of responsibility. And again, Ron's definition is having the ability and the willingness and the opportunity to change or not. So there's your definition of responsibility, right? So you have to have the knowing, you have to have the skill and the ability, and you have to have the willingness. And then there has to be an opportunity in front of you to choose whether you change or not. And once those things are all present, then you are responsible. It's empowering. And also empowering to know what you can't be responsible for. Thinking back to homework, if a child is given some homework and they really do not know how to do it, they can't be responsible for it. They might be willing to do it. They've got the opportunity in front of them and they can choose whether they try or not. But if they are not absolutely able, they're not responsible.
And I wish when my children were young that I understood what change was, so that when they were having a breakdown and then they knew what change was, I could say, it's just a change. That's all it is. I'm thinking that would have eliminated half of the meltdowns from school or whatever was going on.
Oh, with you 100%. I constantly watch my daughter with her 3 under 4. Now she's just changed. Enjoy the day. It's just
changed. I'm sure some changes are a little easier to enjoy than others.
Yeah.
These concepts, Sharon, you write that the concepts of change, consequence, before, after, cause and effect, they're often meaningless to a picture thinker. And we should explain that a typical person gathers those meanings as they grow up. But a person with dyslexia, I use that in the very broadest sense of the word to encompass dysgraphia, dyscalculia, dyspraxia, the whole deal. When a child with that way of thinking grows up, they don't automatically absorb those meanings. And so that's why we have to have them model the meaning so that they can look at the model and they can think with the meaning of the model as they're looking at it, as they're observing it. And the beautiful thing I find about that is it's so non-confrontational, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you're talking to the model, like, well, he's doing that, but what if he did that? And how could he do this? And you can move the model around. It's 3D. And it is a brilliant non-confrontational, non-personal way of dealing with behaviors. You can say, well, if this person did that, that would happen. And if this person did that, this could happen. And I've often found that that is a very non-confrontational, acceptable way of dealing with behaviors. And you also say that the ingredients for resiliency, you can view change as a challenge or an opportunity, which I think is what Nadine was saying. Relying on past successes, seeing their choices clearly, that happens when you see the models too. Having patience. That's a good one, to see that the change plays out. Having confidence, knowing that you can be part of it, and competence, knowing that you have the ability to do that. Sharon, you say this helps one to adapt to change and become resilient. And I think that we touched on this just a little while ago, knowing that there are some changes that you can be part of and some changes that you're not part of. And that's the serenity verse, isn't it? And we need to know the difference. When I'm working with the kids, I very often get them to make 2 models. If they choose to make a model for change and put themselves in it the first time, fine. But very often they make the caterpillar and the cocoon and the butterfly. And obviously that's got nothing to do with them. So if they've made that one, then sometimes I suggest that they make one where they've had something to do with the change, like the little guy watering the feed. And then they can see right in front of them the one you have nothing to do with and the one that you can make difference.
Back to the mental health, if we can't adapt to change, I mean, some change is easier than others. I think we all agree with that. that's where we can become depressed or very anxious. And if they don't have those qualities to accept change, it can lead to bigger things.
I never really connected resilience with change, to be honest, until you wrote this article. Did anybody else?
I see that connection too. And I feel learning the concepts and understanding change through Davis is so powerful, but a lot of times the parents or the caregivers don't have the skill. So if change is still affecting the parents negatively, but the child has got tools to help with change, but sees examples of that other happening, there's that clash with the mental health. It's tough. Because so many families don't understand that it's our thinking abilities that cause the impact with change, which causes dysfunction in our families. They'll go around for years thinking it's someone, it's a substance, or it's an issue, or it's employment, or it's whatever. But yet it's as simple as we think differently and we don't understand the reactions we have to that.
Well, Jessica was just saying that using that for addictions would be incredible.
It's very true. Especially if the kid knows and the family doesn't, then the kid ends up being parentified, right?
It would be so cool if we could just get a family that's very dysfunctional and provide the Davis tools with consequence and change time, but and everybody do it. It would be interesting to see how the dynamic would change. My son took the program first. I think I would have been a better mom to him following the program if I had already done a program.
My kid is avoidant, like we both are, but he doesn't want to do it. So I'm doing it and then doing it to him after. So
yeah.
I love the way that you're doing it by example.
Well, that's what I figured out.
That's what I do with my daughters. My daughter can't come and do a program right now. She's got 3 under 4, right? Who's got time to sit down and do Davis? So all I can do is lead by example and try to explain and be patient.
We have 2 case studies right here.
Okay. Yeah.
We need resilience at school when we're children. We need resilience at work. We need it socially. We need it emotionally. We need it physically. And we need it mentally. So it is a big deal, which I really hadn't considered. The physical resilience, there was an example the other day of this blind man who swam the Georgia Strait. He swam from Seychelles to Nanaimo.
Yeah.
And he's blind and there were waves and he was dying. I mean, that's physical resilience for you. And I'm sure there was mental and emotional resilience mixed in with that too. But socially, it's a difficult one too. Because when you say something to someone, you might have an expectation of what their reaction will be. I made this mistake with my son. When he went to school, I said, well, if a child has a toy, you can just go up to them and say very politely, may I have a look at your toy, right? And with a bit of luck, they'll say, sure. But obviously they don't. And then that change is not expected. And then shut up for failure.
We're all bad moms and good moms.
Exactly. Does anybody have any examples of resilience that they've attained through understanding change?
I find the word resilience in itself just an interesting word. It's to be able to recover quickly from difficulties, the toughness, the capability to withstand. I think that's all I did for 40 odd years until Davis came along. But resilience held me back. Resilience, it gave me the capability to get back up, but sometimes you need to sit down.
There's times when you don't need to be resilient and you just need to sit with crumbling. But I guess in a way that is a sort of form of resilience because you did have to crumble. You just had to go further down to be able to build back up again. This is turning into a therapy session, isn't it?
When you immigrate, that's another form of resilience because you change from what you know to going to somewhere that you might think you know or that is completely different depending on where you go.
Well, especially for you. Yeah. I mean, Australia to Edmonton, really?
I know. Yeah, so, I mean, that's resilience, isn't it?
And I wasn't feeling very resilient when my landlord decided to demolish my previous home. But having said that, obviously, having got through it and now where I am, that was a really good change. It's just that you don't know it at the time. You can't see it. I think that's the worst part, is not being able to see the end.
That's where confidence in yourself comes in.
Or not.
You know, when you were talking about responsibility, I think one of the biggest things for me, for my mental health or emotional health, was knowing that I wasn't responsible for very much when it really came down to it. It just relieved me of a lot of anxiety. Oh, I'm not responsible. I can't make that happen. It made me a happier person.
Yeah, and that is totally knowing what you can change and what you can't change. Yes. Very powerful.
For me, I've been learning a lot about contrast, but I never called it contrast in my life. I used to call it like difficulties or problems or struggles or things that were against me. And I'm learning to call it contrast. And for the first time in my life, I'm seeing them as positives, because those are things that let me know that those are not things I want in my life. When I think of change with resilience, how changing my perspective on contrast has really changed resilience for me. Does that make sense?
Not yet, but I'll get there.
Okay, prime example. Last week, I needed to pick up some groceries, but I knew going to the grocery store, it was something in me that just wasn't right. I don't know why, but I went against it. You gotta have a coin to get a cart. There's no change machine. I've already blurted out my frustration to like two or three different people. So I've already upset their lives. And then I see this person who works there. I'm, how do you get a loony? Blah, blah, blah. And then finally, I just stopped. And I went, no, this isn't right. This is contrast. I don't even want to be here. So I drove across the road and I went to Sobeys. And all of a sudden, I started to laugh. And I was standing in the middle of Sobeys. And I swear, everybody was looking at me. That is so funny why I went against what I wanted to do. Why didn't I just go to the store I wanted to go to? Normally in the past, that episode would have left me crappy, but because I recognized that, oh, that just told me, I now know I'm never going to that store again. Contrast has won.
We have to listen to ourselves, definitely.
I think the point was, when I originally wrote it, was that that was a key to being mentally sound, was to be resilient. But with a dyslexic person, like, well, even with what Nadine was saying, something like that could trigger you to be in a foul mood for the rest of the day and taking it out on everybody else instead of just recognizing what it really is. There were some changes there that she didn't like, right?
Yeah, I didn't like it.
I think sometimes with people with dyslexia, they just get locked into the whole idea and they feel it because they have great imaginations. As a result, they show some negative behaviors.
We have the ability to experience perception as reality, and we're very good at that. Better than your average person.
The universe is against us, right? Something like that. In the past, I would have been like, oh, everything's against me and there's no, you know, instead of just being like, hilarious. Why did I go to the wrong store? I didn't even want to, you know what I mean?
You nailed it.
We all have the opportunity to choose whether we want to change or not as well.
That's what I laughed at. I'm so funny how I thought I wanted to play with change today, but I did not.
You had the opportunity. But the mental health issue is big these days, isn't it? That's where you're coming from, Sharon.
Yeah, it's a big thing right now. And I guess that came out of COVID.
That was a change nobody saw coming.
And that did take a lot of resilience for some people. Even just having to put a mask on, that's what really kind of annoyed me.
A deep question. Do you think that the resilience that came out of COVID is obvious? Is there a positive to us being resilient to all that was thrown at us during COVID? Do we see a benefit?
I went to the doctor on Friday and I didn't have to wear a mask. I really appreciated that. Now washrooms are open, so I appreciate those little things.
It's true. Do appreciate not having to stand in line and with our masks outside the supermarket, and only so many people can go in. And
I think we can see that we can all survive a huge change together. And even though it was far from perfect, but I think on the whole planet pulled together to some degree.
Particularly at the beginning, I think. Because I don't think anybody thought it was going to last for very long. I enjoyed seeing whole families take the dog for a walk and whole families go for bike rides. I thought that was a very cool example of being resilient and a benefit.
I like a lot of what came out of it socially.
Yeah. Working from home. Yeah, it cracked open the conversation about inequality, about justice and the peace.
Well, there we are. I didn't expect to go everywhere we went.
But we're dyslexic and it's about change. So.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And there's five of us. If I tried to sum this up, our mental health benefits from our ability to be resilient which basically means that we bounce back from all sorts of things, from experiences and challenges, which are often known as change. But the ability to understand what change means and the ability to know that there are some things we can change and some things we can't change helps us to be confident in our abilities. And when we have confidence and we know we can control, then we have more of an ability to be resilient and our mental health improves. But this makes me think on my feet because we went in so many different places. Thank you to Sharon and to Jessica and Paddy and Nadine. Thank you so much for joining us. And we will see what the next podcast comes up with in September. And thank you all for listening. Enjoy all your various changes.
Thank you.
Bye.